Welcome to the Together Podcast, powered by Xponential. The Together Podcast series highlights critical conversations on how church leaders can pursue the great collaboration together. We are all very familiar with the Great Commission and the challenge to go. There has been much taught on the Great Commandment and the need to go with love, but is it possible we've missed another great that Jesus also gave us? It's the Great Collaboration, calling us to go in love together. In this podcast, Xponential continues the multiplication conversation with a focus on the importance of collaboration, coming together as a body of believers to fulfill the mission of Jesus. Imagine the impact if North American churches came together to accomplish Jesus's mission. This podcast series focuses on five areas the church can come together on to accomplish true kingdom multiplication. And now, here's your host, Dave Ferguson.
Well, we want to welcome you to another edition of the Xponential Podcast Series. I'm Dave Ferguson, president of the Xponential Conference. I'm glad you joined us today for another insightful conversation. This time it's with author and leadership consultant Katie Cole. Katie is a strong passion to serve people, and I love how she combines that with a deep hunger to learn how to help in ways that really make a difference. She served in churches, leading a variety of critical roles, including the executive director of a multi-site church, and then 3 years ago launched her own company and began to work directly with church and business leaders. Katie's newest project, which I believe in, is helping church leaders who want to do a better job developing female leadership talent in their congregations. Just a couple interesting facts about Katie. She's also served as a registered nurse. I didn't know that one. She's also regularly reading about 4 or 5 books at a time. I guess I'm not surprised by that. I hear she plays a mean game of Scrabble. And most importantly, she is going to be one of our main stage speakers at the upcoming Xponential Conference. So, Katie, welcome. Thank you for being here with us today.
Oh, thank you, Dave, so much. It's really an honor to be here with you and with all of our listeners.
Hey, I'll tell you what, you kind of got me curious there. So if you're always reading 4 or 5 books at a time, what are a few things that you're reading right now? You're going like, oh, here's a couple of good ones.
Oh, gosh, I do have a few good ones going on right now. The first one that comes to mind is a book called Managing Leadership Anxiety by Steve Cuss. It's come out in the last few months. It's an excellent book, really talks through sort of the inner dynamics of leadership and some of the anxieties and fears we face as leaders. And most importantly, that our anxiety is contagious to our team. And so how can we prevent passing that on and having cultures of anxiety, which I think is a really common issue in all organizations, but particularly in the church right now, I see it a lot.
Okay, that's one I need to get because you're the second person I've heard talk about that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. I'm in the middle of Deep Work by Cal Newport, which has been around for a long time, but at this stage of my leadership, I'm finding it particularly insightful and helpful. I just finished a book called Get a Grip by Gino Wickman, which is an operating system for entrepreneurial fast growth environments, which has been really helpful for church planters that I'm working with or multi-sites that are just kind of growing at a fast pace. It's kind of a business mindset from the tech industry, so that's been really fun. It's Not Supposed to Be This Way by Lisa Turkhurst, I just finished, which is a really great book on sort of the realities of life in a broken world, even as a very strong, influential leader. And then the last book I'm reading right now is Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates and her view on just global perspectives and global poverty and oppression is, I think, really challenging and insightful. She's got a different perspective than maybe those of us in the church world, but it's a really fresh and smart take on many of the things that we're all knowing are there but aren't doing a lot to work on. And they're really leading the way on that.
All right. That's awesome. All right. So there you go, listeners, your assignment. There's a few good ones that are, that Katie's recommended. Well, your latest book, too, is Developing Female Leaders. And thank you so much both for that. And I'd like to kind of do a little bit of dive into that topic, if you don't mind. I know in the book you talk about navigating some of the landmines, and it was fun for me to be with you in Dallas because I think in the room it was you and probably 75 guys.
And I'm pretty sure that was the ratio, yes.
Really talented church planters, but it was all men. And you brilliantly seemed to navigate that room, but also I think even in the room there are some people who are egalitarian and some people who are complementarian. So you had a lot of different views of women leadership, but you were able to kind of negotiate that curve. So talk to me about that a little. How do you navigate the landmines on this topic of developing female leaders in the church today?
I think this is a topic that the more I talk with people about it, the more I feel like we have been ready for a way to navigate sort of the challenges of this topic for a while, but it's been hard to find our way. It's very loaded. It's highly emotional. It's incredibly personal for a lot of people, men and women. It feels, it does feel like a landmine, and it's hard to put your toe into it without knowing what's going to happen. It's easy to offend one another. It's easy to call into question a lot of the things that many of us grew up with or really have held on to for a long time. So for me, I really got into this from a different angle than most people. I work with church leaders all over the country. I work with a lot of multi-site churches and on a lot of leadership pipelines. And hands down, the number one issue I run into with everyone is none of us have enough leaders to fulfill the mission God's given us. But exactly, I was right. Teaching on some of these leadership development issues and multi-site growth strategies. And I had a series of guy leaders come and talk to me about how to better leverage the women in their congregation. And it was surprising to me because they were from very different theological backgrounds. One was very complementarian. One was very egalitarian. One was kind of in the middle, and they weren't quite sure where their church stood, but they were working on it. And it sort of prompted me into these conversations with these folks about how to help maximize the leadership potential. And it was shocking to me how easy it was for them to get stalled on empowering women. And then when I got a chance to meet with some of the women on their team, how easy it was for them to feel like their leaders didn't notice them and there was no opportunity for them. And I started to just understand that there was such a gap between what many male pastors, most of our churches have primarily male leadership teams, and they're becoming aware that there are these leadership gifts that would really help their church move forward. Again, whether women are welcome into every level of leadership or just a few levels of leadership, we're still not using them the way they could be, and we're certainly not developing them to their full potential. So I call these guys the good guys. They want to make a difference, but they aren't sure how. And then when they try, the women who want to move forward and contribute more don't know how to interpret what's happening, and they oftentimes feel like it is the opposite message of what these guys intended. So I really wanted to kind of tackle that middle ground for those people who want to maximize female leadership in their church more, and for women who want to take steps forward in leadership. How do we help those two groups come together in a way that brings honor to God, that serves the people, and maximizes what we're trying to do in ministry?
Well, let's go there. I mean, because a lot of the book is about how to release that latent potential that is there, regardless of your theological perspective. So let's give us some thoughts on that. How do you release the potential? Because all of us, I mean, there's 50% of the people or more.
Yeah, actually, the statistics would say that most churches are 61% women.
61?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
But less than 10% are in formal leadership roles. And so I think one of the challenges is that for most, especially senior pastors, executive pastors, anyone on the platform, when you look at your congregation, it doesn't feel like women are the minority. In fact, it feels like they're in the majority because they are. And so it's easy sometimes to be focused on, gosh, how do we help the guys engage? And I actually have been a strong proponent for a long time of you get the dad, you get the whole family. You know, I believe in those kind of strategies. But if you sit in the congregation and look at the platform, you see something totally different. And this is what most of the women in your congregation see, is only men. And so just like you look out and see a majority of women, they look at leadership and see a majority of men and feel like they're not welcome. So in the book, what I did is did a kind of a big research project because I'm kind of an HR nerd and wanted to really get to the actual nuts and bolts. There are a lot of voices, and I really believe in people passionately advocating for their view on this topic. That's not my angle. I'm a researcher. I'm an organizational development person. I have my master's degree in human resource development. I care about how our organizations run. I care about the cultures that we build, and I care about empowering leaders to fulfill the mission God has given us at the local church level. And so I want to know, how do we do this? How do we actually talk about it? What kind of practices do we need in our organizations? Oh, what can spiritual leaders do to bring clarity to this? So out of the research kind of bubbled up these 8 best practices. And one of them is to take time to clearly define your theology. Now, this seems counterintuitive to most people. In fact, when I teach and coach most senior and executive pastors on this topic, they're afraid to talk about their theological view on this because they feel like no matter what it is, whether they're on one extreme or the other or somewhere in the middle, someone's going to be disappointed and someone's going to leave the church. And that's probably true because whenever you take a stand on a theological issue, some people will applaud and some people will leave. And that's the way it is. However, I think it's easy to underestimate from a woman leader's perspective how confusing it is to try and lead in an environment where you don't know where your lane is and you don't know what you're invited to be a part of. In fact, I would say one of the biggest mistakes we've made as church leaders over the last couple decades is we've spent a lot of time articulating what women are not allowed to do and not nearly enough time articulating what we welcome them to do. And so as I interviewed women, I was just amazed at how many women are doing things like leading the greeter team and wondering if that's okay. They are organizing events and are unsure whether they can open in prayer because there are some guys on the cleanup team at the meeting that she's giving the logistics for.
And all this is because there's just not clarity about the theological convictions of the church. Okay.
And part of it is when the people you want to put in leadership are women who have been in the church for a while, and they know this is an issue. And from a woman who knows their Bible, loves the Lord, wants to honor their leaders, the last thing they want to do is step over the line. So if you don't declare where that line is, they will pull way back and lead way below their capacity in an effort to not do anything that would disrupt what you would have for them. So if you bring just a little clarity to it, even if you have a very conservative theology, I can almost guarantee you it will give women freedom to run fuller than they're running now.
So one of the things, I mean, it's almost counterintuitive because the fear is, wow, if I actually go ahead and put it out there, here's what we believe, whether it's egalitarian or complementarian or somewhere in between, then I'm going to alienate people. But the truth is, by actually putting it out there, you allow people to know, here's what I can aspire to, here's the things I can do, and they actually serve a greater capacity.
Right. And sometimes it's very simple things. Like I spoke at a church, a Baptist church that has a conservative theology, and it's a large multi-site church. Many of your listeners would probably know who it is, in a very big city. And I met with the senior pastor. We had a staff meeting and he articulated their very complementarian theology. And then we talked about what that actually means and that is a barrier around some leadership roles. But these are the leadership roles that are open for women. And I had women who had been on staff for multiple years come up in tears to me and say, I had no idea it was okay for me to pray in front of my entire team. I had no idea that I could lead a small group in my church. This is incredibly freeing that I get to use my gifts in more ways. And all of that is just really dormant potential that if we just bring clarity to what we already believe and already want to see happen, we will see a lot more momentum in this area.
That's great. What else did you find? Because you said, I think of you actually did 1,000 churches?
So we interviewed I interviewed 30 female leaders who had sort of broken through the glass ceiling of leadership. In the church, we call it the stained glass ceiling, but grown in high levels of leadership. And then surveyed 1,200 women who were on church leadership teams, either as high level volunteers or paid staff roles.
Okay, good. Even more than that. Mm-hmm. So what other things did you discover from that?
So one of the things that's interesting is that women approach leadership opportunities very different than men. And I think this is an important piece for most guys out there to realize, because when we look for leadership in most of our churches, we're looking for people who are raising their hand, putting their name in the hat, volunteering, kind of coming up to you and saying, hey, let me, you know, carry your bags on your next trip, or let me sit in on a meeting with you. They have a hunger. And when we see that hunger, we know we have a leader. The challenge is that for most women who've grown up in church environments or conservative environments in our country, or maybe their family was very conservative around gender roles, they don't tend to put their name in the hat. They don't volunteer. They have what we call the sticky floor, which is sort of the opposite issue of the glass ceiling. The sticky floor are those mental conversations women are having in their head, sort of taking them out of the game before they even get a chance to get started. So one of the interesting research pieces in the book that I just love this example is that men and women apply for leadership roles very differently. When a guy looks at a job description, whether it's for a career move or a volunteer role in your church, he looks at the job description, and if he feels confident of about 60% of what's on the job description, he will apply for the role. He figures he'll get the job. He knows he's going to crush it. He'll fake it till he makes it. He'll Google and come up with some awesome strategy that will blow people's brains. Like, he's going to do awesome. When a woman leader looks at a job description like that, she has to feel confident of 100% of everything on the job description from day one, or she won't even apply.
Wow.
She figures there's someone else. She figures she's not the right person for the job. When you add it into the church environment and there's a spiritual dimension to it, she knows God has someone better. She doesn't want to hold their church back. She would never want to show up and disappoint her leaders. So think about that as for us as a leadership team. We're waiting for people to have confidence and go for it. And these women who are high capacity leaders, probably leading in the marketplace or in their home life in very significant ways, are taking themselves out of the opportunity, and we don't even know they're interested. So we have to change the way we recruit people. We have to change the way we write our job descriptions. Sometimes a simple conversation with a female leader that says, "This is why I think you should at least apply for the job," can change the entire trajectory of her leadership development and how she brings those gifts to your local church.
Why, that's so interesting. 60% versus 100%. Why is that, do you think?
Well, I think especially
let me say this too, uh-huh. And I want to hear your answer to that, because I'm thinking about you, and I don't know if this is actually true of you, but I was like going like, I get the impression that you would be someone, if you saw it and you go like, if I can do 60, if I do 60%, yeah, I'll crush it. You would have that kind of a mindset, or am I wrong?
Well, I think I battle this just like everybody else does, but okay. I had some opportunities. First of all, I grew up professionally in nursing, which is a female-dominated environment.
True. Okay.
So I didn't have the same environment. Like, I had strong women around me calling some things out of me in a profession that wants women to lead.
Yep.
And so that changes some things pretty significantly. I think I also have a very strong, you know, personality that likes to conquer. That is very unique around women. So you can, you know, pray for me, because there's other issues that come with that. But
I have those people all around me. My wife is like that. My assistant Pat's like that. That's all I have.
I think for those of us with stronger leadership gifts, most of us grew up in environments, especially church environments. Most guys would be surprised to know that when we exhibit those gifts early on in our growing up, especially in maybe our teenage years, most of the mentorship and discipleship that happens for women comes in the form of, we want a gentle and quiet spirit. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a big idea, or when you get up and you're loud in the room, or you start bossing people around, that's actually a character issue that we will work with you to correct. Now, a 15-year-old guy who gets up and takes charge gets every pastor on the staff wanting to take him out to lunch at his high school.
Yep.
Every parent is proud of him. People are speaking life and vision over him. I don't think this is going to be an issue in about 5 or 10 years. I'm really hopeful that it will be different. And there are some 20-year-old women who need a different journey than you going after and recruiting them, because they've already started 3 nonprofits and they need to actually pay their dues a little. But for those of us kind of in the 35 and over category, particularly from a generational standpoint, or women who have grown up in conservative environments, they need a little help connecting the dots that these strong gifts are made on purpose in them. The fact that their voice carries across the room and everyone feels it when they enter, that's not a negative. That's actually a sign of God's giftedness, and we want to leverage that for kingdom gain.
That's awesome. So give us one more practice that you discovered, because you said there was like 7 or 8 of them that kind of rose mm-hmm. to the top.
So one of them, particularly if you have staff, if you are a church with a size with a staff, is to really look at your HR practices, because most of us have inherited systems, processes, even ways we think about hiring staff teams that are really actually quite discriminatory against women. So pulling some basic metrics on your staff and measuring, what are you paying men versus women? Mm. Again, even regardless of your theology, if you call women directors and men pastors, that's not nearly the issue. But if you have a woman at one campus who's overseeing 300 kids, and you have a student guy at another campus overseeing 20 students, and he's making $10,000 more than her, you need to really evaluate if that is fair and equitable. Measuring things like who are you licensing for ministry and how does that affect their take-home pay? What kind of insurance benefits do you give someone if they carry the title pastor versus director, manager, coordinator? Just make sure that if people have equal responsibility and authority, that you are giving them equal compensation in all the ways that we pay and affirm leadership in church environments.
All right, I'll tell you what. Here's I want to try something out here. We'll see if this works. I wear a few different hats. I pastor a large multi-site church. I also provide vision for New Thing Network, a large kind of church planning network. And then I also get to be the president of the Exponential Conference. So coach me up a little bit. Let's start with, if I'm pastoring a local church, what kind of things would you, I don't know, what kind of things if you had, oh, I don't know, a 5-minute coaching session with me going like, hey, here's the things you need to think about.
Mm-hmm. So I think as the pastor of a local church, you want to really take a look at how you're stewarding your weekend service, because so much of our culture and your leadership is communicated on the weekend. It's the thing the congregation sees the most, and it's where you have your loudest voice. And so just ask yourself or ask some people who care about you and believe in you, you know, to give you some feedback. What kinds of examples are you using in your messages?
And when you ask people, do you mean ask women?
I mean, ask anybody.
Oh, okay.
Because just looking for feedback, and particularly if you're wanting to look at gender bias that might be sneaking its way in, obviously women are going to be more sensitive to that. But there's probably other things that you want to make sure are showing up in your ministry. So people of ethnic backgrounds, different ages, different socioeconomic levels, whatever the culture of your local church, you should have representatives from all those kinds of people giving you feedback about how you're communicating on the weekend. And not just your message, the way you do the greeting, when you bring someone up and affirm them by having them give their testimony at the offering and say a prayer, the family you use on the Advent moment for Christmas Eve, like all of those things matter. And are you equally representing everyone? And I think sometimes it's easy for a leader of any stage, but especially in the pastorate, that we can kind of use stories that relate to us and we rely on affinity more than the practices of great communication. So your stories, if they're always about being a dad with a stay-at-home wife, that's going to be communicating something to the women, even though that's your life and it's very valid. And I love women who stayed home. I did that myself. It's something you want as part of your repertoire, but you don't want it as the only way you talk about women in your congregation. That shouldn't be the only example of marriage that you give. You want to make sure
you're implicitly excluding them then.
Right. They're wondering, gosh, if I were to ever marry someone as godly as that guy, is this the only route for me? And I would say the same thing would happen if you're married to a lawyer who's kicking butt, doing a big career.
Right.
Are you making space for a stay-at-home mom where she knows that everything she's doing to impact her kids and serve in your church is just as valuable to you? So just making sure you have variety. If you're making jokes about being a dad, are they affirming? Sometimes I see men kind of making wisecracks about lazy dads. And I took my kids. I got lost in the car line. I go to the grocery store. I don't know what to do. I'm like, really? You don't know how to buy groceries? Like, please don't.
Hold it. Katie, you're getting personal now.
Please don't put men down to try and make women feel better. That's not what we're looking for. We want all of us to be doing awesome at everything God calls us to. So just how is that coming across? And are you relying on kind of easy laughs that may be sending a message you don't intend to send?
That's good. Okay, so what about church planning networks? So we got a church planning network. We have 40-some networks across the United States and a whole bunch beyond that internationally. But same conversation. We would love to leverage female leaders. What's your coaching there?
One of the, I think, important things to remember, especially in church planting, is that when you plant a church, it is all hands on deck. And there are many women who lead at very high levels in the early stages of their church. They're carrying the weight. They carry the spiritual burden with their husband. Sometimes it's formal, but most of the time that role is informal. I think pastors' wives have one of the most challenging roles in the church because of everyone's expectations without any real clear direction, and oftentimes no direct authority to give vision to what it is they're going to bring to their congregation. And so one of the things we can do with church planting is bring some clarity around who is this pastor's wife and what do we expect of her and how can we affirm and give her equal authority with the responsibility that she's carrying. I think sometimes it's as simple as a title. She could be your number one volunteer with the title that matches the things you're expecting of her or the things the congregation needs from her. Sometimes it means that you actually need to be adjusting the way you talk about your leadership team, that she's on the leadership team or she's one of the church planters. Or sometimes we need to give a lot more permission and make it public that this is a church planter's wife and she's got her own life and her life is not living for all the people of the church. She's got other things she's called to. And just giving space and freedom, but acknowledging the challenge it is for women who are in it, but not fully leading it, but feel the burden of it, but aren't sure how to navigate it. I think particularly male church pastor planters have a great opportunity to clarify that and champion the role of their wife in the role their wife feels called to fulfill.
Yeah, which I think that was probably Sue and I's story too. That's helpful. And of course, in our case, the new thing, we would love to see more female leaders actually planting churches and taking the lead on that. And we're starting to see some, but there's still a, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, like what we could do to do a better job of encouraging that.
One of the things that I think is important is that when you are a male pastor, there are a lot of built-in support systems and ministries and initiatives and relationships for your wife who is along in this very unchartered territory and kind of unknown space. When you are married to a strong female leader, there is almost nothing for you. In fact, most of the environments that husbands of female leaders experience have a lot of shame and awkwardness and feel very uninvited. So I think one of the things organizations like yours, to be honest, can do is create less gender-based pathways and segmentation, and instead make it about leaders and spouses. So if we want to support spouses in this particular way, let's support spouses. Let's not call it the pastor's wives, and please don't take them shopping and have them make a craft. Like, let's talk about the real sides of that role. And let's invite all the spouses or all the families or all the people who are supporting and really giving voice to that and making room before there's a demand. I don't think there's going to be 100 husbands of church planters that are going to rise up and say, let's start connecting. I think as organizational leaders, we have to make a way for them before. And then at the same time, making it clear that if women are in church planting or taking strong leadership roles, that they shouldn't go off with the wives at a church planters conference. They belong in the leadership room. This is where we're talking about leadership. And many times, even from the platform, we might communicate, hey guys, let's stay in here. Wives, you can go off over there. Well, if you're a female leader, you don't know what to do.
Right.
And so just watching our language, watching the way we set up, challenging our assumptions, and really being open to new practices that are more open. It's not even huge shifts. It's just old habits that need to change and more accurately reflect what we actually believe and want to see.
Katie, you're so good on this topic, I'm telling you. Okay, let me give you one more then too. So like Exponential, so I get to play the role of the president of the conference, Exponential. And at Exponential, we really see ourselves more like what we call a chamber of commerce. So we're rooting for everybody, whether you're complementarian, egalitarian, somewhere in between. We're all about church planning for everybody. But at the same time, in the same spirit as what you're writing about, developing female leaders and how do we kind of continue to do more and more of that. What coaching do you have for us?
Well, I think as an organization, one of the important things is to make sure that the women leaders who are actually leading are doing it with the right title and the right authority that you want them to have. And most women who are leading in especially things like this, parachurch organizations are doing it for the right reasons, and they usually have a lot of talent and ability, but they tend to not assume, they definitely don't assume the title, they don't ask for the title, but they need the title to get their job done. So if you have women on your team who have ambiguous titles, which we tend to do when we're sort of throwing ourselves together or we're a fast-growing place or we're all remote and no one really cares about titles, but the difference between walking in with a title that says administrative assistant to all things Exponential versus director of all operations changes the dynamic when someone gets an email from that woman. So you want to make sure that if you're asking females, any leader, but particularly pay attention in case you're accidentally having bias against women, if they're leading in ways and speaking for you, make sure they have the title that the rest of the world will know what you want them to do in this interaction. It's not for them. It's for their ability to carry out what you've done to the rest of the people they're interacting with. So that would be the first one. The second one is to really steward your platform to help people engage this conversation. I think this is an important conversation for every church, regardless of your theology, because our culture is demanding we pay attention to this. I think the Me Too movement and the Church Too movement have done an amazing job raising the fear factor about this topic. And so I find many churches are scared of being sued. And so they're taking a look at things that they really, from an integrity believer standpoint, in my opinion, we should have been looking at a long time ago. And so if we're not paying people correctly, if we're not giving the benefits we should, if we're not maximizing the leadership potential of people, if we're misstewarding people, we want everyone to lean into that conversation and gain whatever ground we can to release all the potential that God has brought our church. And there are folks like you and other people who have platforms to just raise the issue and say, this isn't easy, but we're leaning into it because it's important. I'm very passionate about this. I care about female leadership. I mean, I have been a leader a long time. I've been a female all the time. And so I care about this issue, but it's not been a big banner issue for me because I just wanted to jump in and serve. I feel like it's a critical issue for the women in our churches, but I feel like it's more strategic because we are not good at diversity of all kinds.
Yeah.
And if we can, as leadership teams, get better at bringing in the voices of the majority of our congregation, then it might I think we have a shot at actually bringing in the voices of the people who are actual minorities in our congregations and in communities. And if we start getting better at that, we are never going to reach the lost world like we're supposed to, which is what this year's Exponential is all about, is having unity like John 17, like Jesus prays for. That is the thing he's praying for us, the disciples yet to come, that we would have unity because that is the thing that will stand out in our world and make people take notice. And so we've got to start where we're at with the leaders that we have now. And if we do a good job with women, I know we can do a better job with ethnic minorities. I know we can do a better job with gender discrimination. I know we can do a better job with all sorts of voices that need to be at the table that are not being heard right now in the kingdom.
That's a perfect segue. We are really, really delighted that Katie's going to be one of our main stage speakers at Exponential 2020 in March in Orlando. If you haven't signed up, it is definitely going to sell out, so you need to do that now. You don't want to miss that. Katie, before we sign off here, if people want to get more information about you or kind of follow what you're up to, where can they find you?
Yes, I'm on social media at Katie Cole, KADICOLE, or my website, katiecole.com.
All right. Thank you, Katie, so much. We're looking forward to seeing you in Orlando, if not before then. But thank you for everything you're doing. And thank you so much for this really, really important conversation.
Thank you, Dave. And thanks for all that you're doing in the kingdom.
Want to go deeper into this great collaboration conversation? If so, check out the Together Resource Library. This free resource library gives you access to dozens of articles, 10 plus videos from Dave Ferguson and Patrick O'Connell, access to the free Together training kit, free ebooks, and many more free resources. You can check out this vast library for collaboration at exponential.org/together-resources/.